Welcome to Through the Keyhole, home of the Association of Laparoscopic Surgeons of Great Britain and Ireland podcasts, putting innovation, technology and training at the heart of modern surgery.
Welcome to the podcast. Today we are going to look at surgical life hacks.
And to do this, I have my very good friend and colleague, Peter Sedman. This is Through the Keyhole. Peter, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Yes, very well, thank you, Tan. It's been a fascinating 18 months, and life will never quite be the same again, I don't think. But we've survived physically. And we're doing well, thank you. It's nice to see you again after all this time, albeit on a Zoom on this occasion.
Absolutely. It's brilliant to see you and to talk to you. I've done an appalling job of introducing you. Peter Sedman is a consultant surgeon, a laparoscopic surgeon at Castle Hill Hospital, and the deputy chief medical officer. So very important person in the hospital. I guess the eyes and ears of the chief executive and of the medical body. But most importantly for me, and I guess all of our listeners, is that you were past president of the Association of Laparoscopic Surgeons. So it's a fantastic honor, actually, to have you, Peter. And I've spent many evenings chatting to you, and your humility and your enthusiasm for life just, always astonishes me. So you're gonna tell us how to make a good surgical life. What does success and what does a good surgical life look like, do you think, in your experience?
Wow, that's a fairly penetrating question, Tom, actually. Thank you. What does success like for me? I have to say, what success like for me is going home and knowing that I've done a good job, and all the way through this, I enjoy my work. We have a tremendously privileged profession to work in, where we do good and we enjoy doing good as we go along, with lots of opportunities. And so I think, what does a successful surgical life look like to me? Well, inner satisfaction is one. Obviously, you have to do a good job, because otherwise, if you didn't, you wouldn't have that inner satisfaction. But it's been a tremendously rewarding and enjoyable career. I wouldn't swap it with anybody, frankly.
So this is really interesting, because you're talking about inner satisfaction, which I guess is our internal validity of what we do. And it's not about the PAs, it's not about the money. It is really genuinely about service, I think. And just before we started recording this, you talked about some of the other people who'd been on the podcast, and you'd said they're all enormously gifted. But I would say that you are somebody who has an amazing education. And I think it was attributed to Barack Obama, what I'm just about to say. But Barack Obama said, education is the name of our attitude, actions, language and behavior with others in real life. And I guess you epitomize that. And what you've just said about going to work and actually enjoying what you do is quite true. But on the flip side, all our junior surgical colleagues, our consultant colleagues, there is a darker, more difficult side of that. So how do you deal with some of those difficult situations? Let me say, for example, a terrific complication. I'm actually walking through the valley of shadow of death myself, and we have enormous power and the ability to inflict problems on other people, yet we take this responsibility to go and try and do good. But when it doesn't work, how do you deal with that?
It's terribly difficult, isn't it? And I don't actually think it gets easy with time, to be honest with you, Tan. And if you may be going through it at the time, at the moment, we've all been through there on more than one occasion, probably. I think what you really need is good support around you and to have a grounding and a bearing, and never let the highs get too high or the lows get too low. I know one of my colleagues once said to me that, you know, there's no benefit to self-flagellation. You have to have insight. You have to have reflection. You have to put it into some form of perspective. And you have to have good colleagues nearby or around you can contact for that support when you need it. And we all do need it from time to time. And I think that's the key to it, really, is having good support, maintaining good relationships with your colleagues who are immensely important in your career. I mean, the career is a 30-year endeavour, and having good people around you, whether it be locally or nationally or through societies, is massively important. But it, those difficulties are difficult, but you don't get the highs without the lows to some extent. And I think it's just a fact of life.
It's the price that we pay. And those are really enormously wise words. It's easier to get divorced than it is to separate from a colleague. And, you know, having difficult colleagues, I often think, you know, one should reflect and say, is it the colleague that's difficult or is it me that's being difficult? And I think this is an interesting part of human interaction. But I think what I'm really taking away from you is support, supporting through difficult times. So what about building one's career? I'm not going to spend too much time on the lows, as you say. Let's go to some of the highs. What are the things that really float your boat?
I have to say, I was thinking about this before I came on this afternoon, and you and I have both had the benefit of enormously influential mentors who have subconsciously, I suspect, guided us down a career and given us a series of attitudes and approaches to life that have proved invaluable. What I would say is that when I became a consultant for the first time, it's a different way of looking at the world. You've completed your training, you've gone through the competitiveness and the things that were necessary to get there, and you're now building the next 20 or 30 years of your professional life. And one of the bits of advice I got was to join the societies and go to meetings at an early stage. And the time to start that is very early on, because going off, making the effort to go to meetings, mixing with your peer groups, getting a sense check of where you are in the country, in the world, getting a sense check of where everything is going is enormously valuable and rewarding. And in parallel to that, teaching the next generation is another way of doing the same thing. You mix with your peers, you'll mix with your groups. So I have to say the single best thing I did was probably joining the ALS GBI, which was, we're both members, and but it's an incredibly supportive society internally. Certainly when I was qualified, it was a very competitive atmosphere. There was a little bit of dog-eat-dog approach to society and to surgery in general. And I came in at a time when laparoscopic surgery was in its infancy, really. And like Don and like yourself, we've been at the forefront of the development of it and the trials and tribulations that has had. And we've all had to support each other because it has been a difficult introduction at times. Now it seems easy, but at the time, there were times when, you know, the future of laparoscopic surgery was being threatened. And the ALS, notably, was a supportive and friendly society to enable us to get to where we are today. And that, I think, is the single biggest thing that has influenced my outlook on the generality of laparoscopic surgery.
Yeah, I think that fellowship is so important. The ability to talk to peers and, as you said, get a sense check of where everyone is. And actually, everyone's got the same problems as you. And that there's an amazing ability to exchange ideas quickly. And going back to your, you know, you referred to your younger days, we've got an ALS GBI academy of, you know, this is the engine room of the ALS, really, of our trainee members, our junior surgical colleagues, who are actually, they're the future of the society, they're the future of surgery. And they're doing amazing work. They're doing collaborative research, setting up LapPass, which I know is very dear to your heart. Yeah. And it, I think it's an infinite game. You can't just say, I'm going to do this and that's success. It's building a huge wall. It's painting a very intricate picture. And sometimes you need other people to give you a hand. I love your comments about the ALS. Would you say there is merit to going to every meeting? I mean, you've already referred to talking to people. I mean, I think I love the meetings for this scientific content, but also for talking to people afterwards.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I have to say, I think of the last 18 months, that's probably the thing we've missed most, isn't it? Having that sort of interaction. It's not the same on a Zoom call. You don't get those nuances. You don't get the general sense of where everything is. Yeah. And so I have to say, that is the biggest miss. Having said that, the modern way of doing things is more about social media, where people keep in touch on a day-to-day basis, which, in fairness, we didn't have. Would I go to every meeting? Well, given that it's once a year, I would suggest yes. If yeah. it was once a month, perhaps not possible, but once a year, I have to say I've never come away from one of those meetings disappointed that it was time not well spent. For the intellectual side of things, but mostly for the ideas and the enthusiasm that you come away with, and the sense that, as you say, we're all in this together. We all have the same challenges and the same problems. And we are the people that can make those solutions. It's not up to other people to do it. It's up to us to create the solutions for the problems we all face.
I think being a consultant surgeon, being a surgeon full stop, it is about leadership at every single part of the ranks, whether you are a consultant or a junior. It's about taking responsibility. And I 100% agree. We miss the nuances and special that warmth of meeting people. It's really interesting. You talk about social media, but of course there are various Twitter confrontations going on, and it's all about not having context to what people say.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, that's very good. So we've talked about success. We've talked about failure and the lows, and you know, not emphasizing either one of those things. We've talked about sort of dealing with those difficult situations. You've mentioned getting involved. You've mentioned saying yes to societies and getting involved with teaching. That draws on time, and we live in a world that's programmed towards money. And we don't value time enough. So my question to you, the busiest person I know, is how do we deal with workload, in a clinical medical context?
I think those close to me would perhaps suggest I'm not the best person to answer that question, because I'm, as you say, I'm a little bit of an enthusiast, and I have the attitude of saying yes and then working out how I'm going to deal with it a little bit later on. But that's, I think the real key to that is to be organized and to have a good team around you with which you can rely upon and draw upon for the support when you need it, actually, Tam. It is a pressurized life. Time is pressured, but it's always been a philosophy of mine, and I still hold to it, that the more you put into things, the more ultimately that you get out of them as well. And, you know, so many of the opportunities that have come my way in life are because I've been there and I've been involved, and people will go to people who are busy to get things done, not to people who are quiet as a general rule, because people who are busy do tend to get things done more often than not. It is a challenge, and it can be a challenge particularly when the clinical workload gets busier than average, because of course that is what underpins everything else that we do. You know, that is priority number one always. But having a good team around you and trying to be organised, are the main two. And of course, you can't be too silly about what the amount of work you take on. But the general principle of saying yes first is not too far off, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the team is very important. And we think about our colleagues, our clinical teams, but of course our administrative teams and our secretaries are so important in keeping this whole thing afloat. And I think from a psychological point of view, we're all people who have a really strong internal locus of control. And so as surgeons, so we're passionate about it. And we do like saying yes, because of course we feel we can do it best. So I get that. And I guess many people who are surgeons listening to this will also identify with that. So you've had a very varied career. I'm going to ask you a sort of slightly left field question. For somebody who's enormously committed, you have got involved in teaching ALS, GBI. You've very kindly invited me to teach on Royal College courses. How do you relax? What is special about your out of hospital time? What do you like doing the best?
Travel actually is my passion is travel, and of course we've had an opportunity to do that through work as well. That's one of the byproducts of being involved in societies and international meetings. So I think travel and family time are the two primary ones. I have gone through periods of playing golf and a wide variety of interests, but I suspect those are the most durable, family and travel, most durable modes of relaxation afterwards.
I think we're very similar. I can remember the EAES Congress. I think it was in Frankfurt. Mm. And I think you took your motorbike across Europe. I mean, to be able to do that is pure luxury now, isn't it? After what's happened the last 18 months.
Yes. Can't wait for the day again, I must say. Yeah.
Now, you did, before we started, you referred to Ian Beckingham. So Ian Beckingham is a great cyclist. He gets out and about. But I guess I asked the question because I think we do need a decompression valve from these careers. And what I really loved about what you were saying was how important it is to reflect, even when you're having a bad time. It's never that bad. So is there... This is also going to be a very personal question. I haven't given you any time, any run-up time to think about it. But is there anything you regret? And I'm not curtailing your surgical career, but is there anything you would really like to achieve that you haven't quite achieved in your sort of sparkling career so far?
Honestly, Tan, no. I've enjoyed every stage of the career that I've had, and I have no regrets. Do you wish you'd done things slightly differently? Of course, we will all think that from time to time. Do I wish I'd done things better? Of course, but I know I did as well as I could do. I have to say, I think perhaps being a little less selfish with my time in terms of family perhaps is one of my bigger regrets. It's been a satisfying period, and I wouldn't take much of it back.
I've been thinking quite deeply over the last 18 months, because we've either been very scared in the middle of clinical stuff, or we've had time off, or we've been isolating. And I think, you know, looking back at your career, you were one of the pioneers with the likes of Chris Royston and Roger Motson, you know, of doing difficult things, new things, when there weren't necessarily the structures, organizational structures around us to protect us and our patients. And it is you know, I always take heart. I you know, by proxy, I was sort of involved in these things. You know, we wrote a paper together with James Wellwood, Chris Royston about Galant Geography.
1994.
Yeah, I look back at that time. It's almost another era. But I look back warmly. But for the people listening, I think the principles of the hard work of trying to do things academically, trying to push the boundaries, having mentors that we could talk to were really important things. Yeah. And I get the impression talking to you whenever I talk to you, not just now, that you're satisfied with life. And I think that's the only thing we can really say when we come to the end of our career. So for those junior surgeons starting a career, you know, what are the things that you aspire to and have some goals that you can actually go towards? So we're coming to the end of our time. I've taken away several surgical life hacks from you. I'm not going to give you my list because I want to hear what you would say, your three pieces of advice to your younger self. What would you say to yourself about 25 years ago?
Yes, you asked a similar question to one of your previous guests and I thought, oh, I hope Tan doesn't ask me that. But anyway, you have. So. So just having a little think about it. Firstly, enjoy the career, because we are so privileged to do what we do. You know, I have many of my contemporaries and friends went into business, into other, you know, industries. Some of them have retired now. Some of them have, you know, been very successful in their own fields. But actually, in terms of inner satisfaction, I come second to none of them. I think enjoy what you do. It's a glorious opportunity of a career. Get involved, I think, is very important, because actually no man is an island and you can't work in isolation. It's a 30-year career. And if you don't get involved and you stay standing, you will slowly and progressively fall behind. And that must be incredibly frustrating. So that would be my second point. Get involved in teaching. You know, teaching is wonderful because you meet the next generation coming through and, you know, they stimulate and enthuse and have great ideas themselves to take forward. And if I can be half the mentor that Chris Royston was for me, I'll have been chuffed to death. And the other thing I would probably say is build a good team around you. You know, it's very important, the work team that you have. We go to work for 30 years. We see our colleagues a great deal. They are our immediate sense of clinical support when things are different. So build a big team or a good team, a good quality team. And remember, being a consultant's a bit of a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, you do have to keep your eye on the longer term as you're doing things. But it's just enjoy. If we can't enjoy our jobs, then I don't know what jobs we could do that would give us that, to be honest.
I'm 100% in agreement. So, you know, my surgical life hack list is not quite as succinct as yours. So for what our conversation has made me think about support and reflection for the lows, mentors and teaching for the highs, and the real importance of the team. But Pete, I really like your three very crisp summaries of what a good surgical life should look like. And these are Peter Sedman's three surgical life hacks: enjoyment, get involved, and the team. And really, those are great principles. Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
An absolute pleasure, Tan, and I really look forward to seeing you in person, hopefully at the end of the year.
Absolutely. Well, I might come up to Hull to see my daughter, so.
It's an open door. Lovely to see you when you're here, Tan. Okay. Excellent.
Joining Through the Keyhole. You will find more interesting podcasts in this series, as well as online resources, from the ALS GBI at www.alsgbi.org.